This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius. Live. Fit. Go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Hey, guys and gals. Welcome to the Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast, brought to you by Arrowhead Land Company. Here you will be educated, entertained, and equipped to get more out of your outdoor experience. So hold on tight, because here we go. What's up, folks? Welcome to the Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast. I am your host, John Hudspeth. Welcome to the show. We have a really fun one today. We got my buddy Nate from Michigan coming on. But, of course, before we get there, I'm just going to back up a little bit and tell you guys what's been going on with me, because I made it out to the ranch this weekend, finally, after all the crazy storms and everything. I was really anxious to get out there and check on the food plots and get some cameras set up and everything. And there was a little part of me that was a little bit worried about my food plots, because we got so much rain. You know, everybody, like, that when you plant a food plot, obviously you pray for rain, you try to time it out with rain. But I was not expecting to get however many inches we got. I know just in the next like 48 to 72 hours after I planted them, we got over 2 inches. And then, you know, it rained basically solid for the next like week. And so I bet we got somewhere between 10 to 12 inches on these food plots I just put in like a 2 week time frame, which is pretty insane. And, you know, this year I changed it up a little bit. I didn't just do my normal no-till drill or no-till drilling. You know, I dissed them all and then used the cultipacker and stuff. And so I was honestly a little worried that we got so much rain that it washed really bad, or that was my fear. Especially one of them that, you know, has quite a bit of slope where I did my alfalfa plot. So I was a little worried going out there. And then also, like I said, I wanted to get some cameras rolling just to help me monitor the plots and, you know, see if the deer are actually using them, see if I'm going to need to spray them, all this and that. So, like I said, very anxious to get out there. I made it out to the ranch Friday, but not in time to actually do anything. And so Saturday, woke up nice and early. I had to bring the Ranger with me, because there was no way I was getting my truck back to the food plots and everything, because it was so nasty out. But got back there and just immediately fell in love with what I saw. They are all coming in fantastically. You know, they're not really up enough to where anything's actually using them yet. You know, you see some leaves and stuff, but nothing to really browse on. But yeah, so I'll just start at the back and work my way forward. So all the way to the back, that's my big 3-acre plot that I did the mix in, two different types of cowpeas, millet, soybeans, and okra, and lots of cowpeas coming up for sure. And I was a little worried on that one that I didn't get my seed rate high enough. I actually had the drill turned up as high as it would go, but those seeds are just so many different sizes, and you know, I was trying to read the drill and figure out which one to use, and the only one listed on the little sheet was the millet, but I knew millet was one of the smaller seeds, and so I turned it up higher than that, and those cowpeas are just really the cowpeas were almost too big to be, using that cultipacker and stuff. But anyway, that's what I had, so that's what I used. But it turned out, I think I got a pretty good coverage on that. So very excited about that. Did have a little hog damage in that one, which I was kind of expecting, but not near as bad as I was afraid of. And hopefully now that those, that the plants are getting up, that it's not going to be as attractive to the hogs. So, checked on the plot, and then I got a camera rolling on my protein feeder, and then I got another camera just rolling on the plot. So that was awesome. And then you move forward. Next, you come to my alfalfa plot, which is the first time ever trying alfalfa. And I don't know, so far so good, I guess is what I can say. I think I told you all in the episode where I talked about when I planted them. I started out, again, I'm just kind of having to guess on all these seed rates. And I started out with my seed rate way too high. And so one third of it is like I got the seed rate too high. The middle third is like perfect, and then the last third, I was running low on seed, and so it's probably a little skimpy on the seed on that last third. But I definitely have growth everywhere, which is good. So I don't know. I'll have to wait a few more weeks to see, if I overplanted or if it's going to work out, and if I underplanted. I don't know. And then the part where that I didn't quite get finished, I think at some point when it gets a little hotter, I mean, honestly, I could probably do it now. Now it's getting really hot, but I have some leftover okra seed that I'm probably going to throw out there. So the saddle's looking good. Got a camera out on it. I have another random protein feeder that I have kind of near there-ish. And so I got a camera rolling on that. I got a camera rolling on the saddle over the hill. So I got that whole area, pretty well monitored. And then lastly, once you go down the hill, I call it the West Triangle spot. I got about a little over an acre. It's probably 1.1-ish acres there, and I planted the mix there. It was looking really good. I don't know if it was the soil or what, but it was looking really, really awesome. So very, very hopeful for that one. Last year, when I planted in soybeans, it definitely looked the best because it gets the least browse pressure. I don't know. I'm not going to, just show everybody exactly where our place is at and how to get there and all that. But I wish I could show you guys this because it does, it's one of those spots where it should be better than it is. Like it's right on the front side of the back area that I'm always talking about. It's along a really big creek, timbered creek and everything. The timber doesn't really extend onto us much, but big thick timber on the neighbors and everything. It's kind of back in this corner. There's a ridge and everything, but I get this over acre food plot, got a feeder, but I really just don't get that much deer action. But it's, it's a spot I can hunt and I can somewhat keep the cows out of it. And so that's honestly the big reason of why I have it and why I keep it. So who knows, maybe after some time, the deer will get used to it, like it better. I've been doing a lot of habitat work around there because I want it to be a good spot. I really do. I think it's one of the few spots where I have not actually killed a buck out of. My nephew killed, a younger buck this year out of there. We've taken some does. And I'll get some pictures of mature bucks there, but a lot of them are at night or maybe the rut passing through. And so I don't know. I'm still crossing my fingers for that one. But, eventually, if it's not working out, I need to figure something else out and, move that setup. But, that's a great segue, accidentally. Speaking of new setups, I've had one extra feeder for the past, 2 years. And it was kind of the feeder that I thought was just, stolen parts of. Like, it doesn't even have a motor on it right now. But I was like, man, there's no reason to have this feeder just, sitting here collecting dust. And so I made a new setup. I went ahead and loaded the feeder up and took it out to one of our pastures where we have a little bit of thick stuff, mostly as usual, kind of on the neighbors and stuff. But that neighbor, he doesn't hunt or anything. We have a really good relationship with him. And so I'm not right on the fence or anything like that, but definitely kind of hunting the deer on his property. But he doesn't care. He's cool with it. All his kids are grown and gone. So he's a really nice guy. So there's a pond there with some trees around the pond. And so I'm going to put a stand in one of those trees. That pond is going to act as kind of a nice little deer deterrent so I can keep deer from getting downwind of me. It's going to be an awesome north wind spot. And I'm definitely going to have to fence it to keep the cows out. But yeah, that's just, it's always exciting to get a new spot. So really excited about that. And didn't get the feeder running or anything. I won't get it running until this fall, but just kind of laying the foundation for getting that spot set up. So So yeah, all in all the plots are looking really good. I think I got 6 cell cameras running. So I'm ready for velvet season. Those cameras have been running like 4 or 5 days now at the time of this recording. And unfortunately, nothing really cool, like nothing, no bucks have popped out to me. I have got a few bucks on camera and several does and stuff. I also put out a bunch of mineral, like trophy rock mineral bricks. Very, very excited for those. A little attraction. Hopefully get some good pictures. And that's one thing I haven't done a very good job of the last probably 2 years is getting mineral out there for the deer. So I'm trying to do better at that. I know I'm a little late this year, but again, with all the storms and everything, that's just kind of what I was dealt. But it's a very important time to do that. Like I talked about last week, got antlers growing. We got fawns about to be born. So those does are going to need to, nurse their fawns and everything. So yeah, get your mineral out. All right, that's enough of that. I don't know what's coming up this weekend. Probably just hanging out with the family. Nothing too much to talk about. And let's just go ahead and get into this week's episode. Like I talked about at the beginning, got my buddy Nate from Michigan coming on. He's the host of the Michigan Wild podcast. Definitely go check it out. Check out all the guys on the Sportsman's Empire. It's always growing. We got a waterfowl podcast now, which I'm pretty excited about. There's guys from all over the country talking about everything from deer hunting to hounds to waterfowl, upland, land management, you name it. We got it on there. So go check out the Sportsman's Empire. Like I said, this week we got Nate coming on from Michigan. And a really, really fun episode. We talked about all kinds of stuff. I obviously asked him several questions about Michigan. And believe it or not, there are some big bucks in Michigan, and Nate talks about that. And then he also did a really good job of kind of switching things around and putting on the host hat and asking me some questions about Oklahoma. And so we ended up, it's not just a Michigan podcast. And we even talk about the longbows a little bit, traditional archery. So like I said, just a little bit of everything. So hope you guys are ready. I'm going to go ahead and quit talking. I'm like almost out of breath from talking this fast. I'll see you guys later. Hope you enjoy the episode, and we'll get into it right now. Hey, everybody. Welcome to today's show. And today we got our good buddy Nate Roosevelt on. How you doing, Nate?
Dude, I am doing good, man. It's we've getting lots of rain here in Michigan and some warm weather. So stuff's growing. The garden is in. Nice. My spring food plots are in. So nice. I feel like I'm kind of ahead of the game here a little bit. So I'm feeling good.
Very nice, man. I don't know about y'all up there, but we have been getting just hammered by rain. I don't know what we're at inch wise, but it's been, it's like lakes are overflowing. There was a Dollar General parking lot underwater a few days ago. We've been getting a ton of rain.
Wow, we're not at that point. We're not flooding. We're not doing anything like that. I think I seen a post you made on social media. It was really funny. There's like a hydrant just running. You're like, here's the problem.
Yep.
I'm like, oh, they must be getting quite a bit over there.
But, we have been.
It's hailing from.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just saying, hailing over here in Michigan. Western Michigan, kind of. We got all the big lakes around us, so we get rain, but flooding doesn't happen too often. Mm. I would say that it couldn't be much better. Like we've got just enough rain, 80s, humid, sunny. And then now today it's like a high of 70 with some rain, a couple, 3-4 days of, high of 70 with some sunshine. So it's going to be good growing weather. We don't have none of that flood washout stuff going on yet. So I'm happy.
Yeah, we've been pretty fortunate where we're at. I guess I've had my plots in the ground about 3 weeks now. And I think 2 or 3 days after I planted them, we got like 2 inches. And then ever since then, it'll be like sunny for a day and then cloudy and stormy for 3 days and then sunny. So it's been a good mix. Like, we've had really good growing conditions. But if we could cut the water back just a little bit and then maybe save it till like July and August, that'd be good. But the last couple of years, we keep having this problem of like really good spring and maybe even early summer rains. And then it just shuts off and like we won't get rain for like 60, 70 days after that. So I'm hoping that's not the case this year.
Yeah, it's like, you know, we can just take that as we need it, you know. Come on, Mother Nature, let's play the game here, you know, do that. And it does come in cycles, but yeah, it's I never really cared about rain too much in my younger years, other than just being a construction worker. So I was always looking, is it gonna rain? Do I get a half day today? Do I get, you know, going to sleep in? You know, that was always my thing. Now it's like food plots are in, fingers crossed, you know, little farmer intuition going on.
That's right. Well, Nate, I feel like we've already gotten a little far into this. We haven't even introduced you yet. So you kind of let the cat out of the bag. You're from Michigan, but why don't you tell the folks a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm from Michigan. I've born and raised here. Like I said, I'm not quite Southern Michigan and I'm not quite Northern Michigan. So I'm kind of like right in that sweet spot between the two. 34 years old, do construction, residential stuff, been doing that my whole life. I've never been an employee. I've always been self-employed. Most of that was working for my dad as a self-employed guy, which was also supplementing with my own kind of jobs here and there, a lot of side jobs in the younger years, you know, just trying to learn as much as I can in the industry. And then, you know, more recently I've got my own LLC and I've been on my own for a while with some guys working with me and doing jobs and those kind of things. And then, you know, just because that wasn't enough for me, I decided to do a podcast too. So I actually do the Michigan Wild podcast, along with you, part of the Sportsman's Empire, network. And yeah, I'm just a guy that grew up, in a hunting family. It was never a question of if, it was just a question of when I was going to shoot a deer. Both sides of my family, were hunters. You know, one side was more of the traditional deer camp, atmosphere, you know, go to Northern Michigan and, you know, big chunks of state land and have your camp that you go to every year and everyone hunts their spot. I didn't really hunt with them at all ever. I was more on my dad's side of the family who grew up a farmer, you know, dairy farmer. So a lot of ag land and you sit on field edges and deer rich environment. So there was lots of targets to go after as a kid, but yeah, that's kind of my upbringing, as a kid doing that and a hunting family. And more recently, you know, probably here in the last 10 years, Michigan's been kind of making a push to try to not be that state that everyone makes fun of, you know, like there's no big deer here, but there is. And there are pockets of guys that are doing better at managing their property and also with some trigger control because we have so many hunters. So it's been fun last decade, you know, passing deer and shooting some really nice ones. And it's getting better every year. But yeah, I'm just a diehard whitetail hunter and I love bow hunting. But I also like doing a lot of other things, small game, fishing, et cetera, that kind of stuff. So try to be well-rounded.
Awesome, man. And I definitely want to touch on a lot of Michigan stuff, especially like the, you know, the deer hunting side, like you said. But starting this off, I got a kind of a random question for you that I didn't give you a heads up about. So being from very, what's the word I'm looking for? Not associated with Oklahoma whatsoever. And I know you got to come down recently and kind of peek behind the curtain and hog hunt with me a few months ago, but, you know, like Oklahoma obviously gets a lot of people coming from like Texas to hunt here and Kansas to hunt here real close, but being somebody who is so far away, hours and hours away, when you think of specifically deer hunting in Oklahoma, what's kind of like the reputation it has, you know, like in the Northeast kind of?
Yeah. From the outside looking in, exactly. Oklahoma is a state. Yeah. Oklahoma is a state that, cheap tags for non-residents. it's a big state with a lot of different areas to hunt. And so I always, from my experience, it was like, if you want to go somewhere new that has an opportunity, Oklahoma is a great spot for non-residents to do that. And then watching some YouTube videos and seeing how people hunt the whitetail on those, that's the only experience I have. I don't know anyone personally that's hunted there. It was like, okay, it kind of has a little Kansas feel to it. Kind of has a little Texas feel. So for me, it was, you know, seeing that. And then I think, I don't know how many years ago it was, that guy shot that giant typical looking deer in Oklahoma, I believe. And it was like, oh, there's big deer here. And then, yeah, then you start finding out that guys are pretty serious about, you know, getting some big whitetails. So yeah, that's probably about my experience with it.
Gotcha. Yeah. I was just curious because, you know, I feel like as residents here and stuff, we kind of like, obviously we kind of know what's going on here, or at least we think we do. And then we, you know, we are starting to hear more and more from other states. And like, I still hear the term that from a lot of people that like Oklahoma is kind of the new sleeper state. And we love that. We'd love it to obviously keep being a sleeper state. I think the cat's officially out of the bag, but, But yeah, so I was just kind of curious, you know, like I said, from you being so far away, kind of what you thought about it. Now, one thing I will point out, I don't know if you heard this or not, they did raise non-resident tags this year, or they're going to. I think it takes effect in July, and it's going to go from $300 up to $700. So they're kind of catching up with a lot of the states around us. And so I don't know if that cheap thing's going to apply anymore, but it is still a good opportunity state for sure.
Well, I think that's fantastic. I mean, if you have a state that's got a wonderful resource like the whitetail, and it's such a pull these days, and, you know, I've heard rumblings that there was a lot more guys from non-residents, you know, kind of pressuring Oklahoma. And, you know, like you said, it's kind of a sleeper state, but it's getting well known. And why not increase that a little bit? Because, I mean, you want to protect the resource and you want to keep the guys. If $500 is keeping someone from, you know, going to Oklahoma, well, maybe when they're there, they weren't really helping the economy that much anyways. So they want to, you know, you kind of got to balance it out somehow, right? So yeah. I think that's cool. Good for you guys. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be cool if you invite me for a whitetail hunt. I'm not going to enjoy it, but, you know, it is what it is.
That's right. All right. Well, I'll flip the script on you a little bit here, and I'll give you my impression of Michigan, and then you can correct me. So I didn't know that like hunting in Michigan was a thing growing up. And it's funny now, because I think a lot of people would argue that it has one of the deepest traditional hunt camps, like if anywhere in the United States, but it just wasn't even on the radar for me growing up. And then I'd say the first time I was really kind of introduced to Michigan hunting was one of the first podcasts I ever listened to. So the very first podcast I ever heard was Eastman's Bow Hunting, and it was on like mule deer hunt. Like a buddy sent me the link and I clicked on it, and I listened to that episode and I was like, man, there has to be this for whitetails. And I ended up finding Wired to Hunt, Mark Kenyon, Wired to Hunt, now part of Meat Eater. And I remember, you know, this would have been, gosh, a decade ago now. And I remember listening to him and following him on social media and stuff, and seeing him just work his absolute tail off, you know, all season long, working so hard to hopefully kill like 120 inch 8-point, and him being so excited when he got it done. And then you like hearing him talk to other people from Michigan, they all talked about how to like, everybody was just brown, it's down and stuff. So that was kind of my initial thought, but you know, like getting to know you a little bit. And like you said, I think a lot of people are kind of seeing that there are more people up there trying to do it right. And I remember the first time I got on like your Instagram and seeing a couple of deer that you had shot, being like, wow, like I honestly did not know there were bucks like that in Michigan. So I'll turn it over to you now, and you can correct me or tell me if I'm wrong or whatever you need to do.
No, man, you're on point. I mean, Mark Kenyon does. I listen to lots of his, YouTube. The reason I like YouTube and like podcasting is probably because of Mark Kenyon, you know, this content he was releasing, and then, you know, the network that he created with, you know, Dan Johnson and that kind of stuff, that all stemmed from him. So he's a top notch guy, and he's always done a really great job, I feel like, representing Michigan. So yeah, you're spot on with that. I mean, the Michigan has had one of the highest, you know, hunter densities in the United States for a long time. And we were right up there with Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, maybe even some years back in the 90s, you know, leading all those states. And people are traveling from all over to go hunt the UP and shoot deer because there's so many deer and all that stuff, which was really cool. But now, you know, fast forward through generations, and the amount of hunting pressure, just, you know, shooting deer, browns down like that. I mean, I know tons of people that growing up as a kid, they would see maybe one buck a year, and they would, if they didn't shoot it, they didn't get their opportunity, or if they did shoot, they would shoot the first thing they saw. So that was like generations of that. And, you know, a lot of grown men who hunted for 20 plus years and never shot anything but a year and a half old deer, just strictly because so many hunters wiping all the bucks off every gun season, because we've always had like November 15th opener, and, you know, multiple weeks of rifle season and muzzler season. I mean, that was what did Michigan in for a long time. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I can think back to first running trail cameras in like 2008, 2009 time frame. I was, you know, senior year of high school, and I was like shocked that I had like trail cam picks of 8-points. And back then, a 100-inch deer was giant. Like, I was like, oh my gosh, look at this thing. It's huge, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I'll fast forward to now, you know, I'm not really getting, you know, my goal is to shoot a 150 in Michigan. Like, I want to do that really bad, but it's got to be like, there's been a few deer that I've you know, we've had that are, you know, over 150 and maybe they're a little young. So you want to like see what they can turn into to reach their full potential. But for the most part, like even talking about an opportunity to shoot a 150 was unheard of 10 years ago. So to be where we are now is really cool. And that's mostly because of guys doing like what you said, you know, get on the same page and doing those things. But yeah, it's a grind. I mean, I scouted and walked and lots of trail cameras, and some years I don't even have a deer over, you know, 130 that, you know, maybe a 3-year-old, maybe not even a 3-year-old to hunt or see. So that mindset of mine was like, okay, I'm not going to settle for these properties. If I don't have what I want, I'm going to start, you know, casting my net out wider and wider. So that's kind of what I've done. I just keep looking and keep, if I'm not happy with where I am, I'm not afraid to travel and try to find a deer. But yeah, it's Michigan's, the rap it gets is, it's pretty crazy. You don't drive down the highway or any interstate and not see a deer blind. Like it's every property has a box blind or a shooting shack, whatever you want to call it. And when October 1st hits and, you know, yeah, October, November, there's trucks parked on the side of the road everywhere. You don't, there's a lot of people that like to hunt Michigan still.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely believe that. And, I had two thoughts while you were talking there. I was just trying to think, you know, like you said, things have changed a lot in the last 10 years and it sounds like for the better. What do you think has had a bigger impact on that? Do you think it was trail cameras and people maybe seeing what's out there if they held off? Or do you think this could be an instance where maybe social media has been a good thing and maybe people from Michigan are seeing these states around them or their neighbors or whatever shooting better deer and be like, man, how do I do that? And maybe that's making people a little bit more willing to, you know, pass a younger deer and wait a little bit. I don't know, either of those two things sound like I'm on the right track.
Yeah, you're definitely on it. I would say there's a couple things that kind of happened for Michigan. One of them being APRs. There was 12 counties in northern Michigan that passed the rule that you had to shoot a deer that was three points or bigger on the side to be able to shoot it. We've always had two buck tags. One can be any buck you want it to be. The second one's got to have four on one side. And it just got to be an inch long to be counted as a point. So that's been forever. And then, you know, but the problem was there were so many gun hunters in Michigan that the majority of people would only buy one buck tag. So they didn't care. Like they never shoot two bucks. So they would buy their one buck tag first swipe that walks out. You shoot it. If that's opening morning, awesome. You know, they can hang out and enjoy the rest of their hunt, you know, their hunt camp. So Michigan did, I can't remember how many, it's got to be close to 10 years ago, they passed the APR in certain zones. So that had like a drastic improvement. Guys who had never seen an 8-point were starting to see 8 points. And then you had that kind of coinciding with budget-friendly trail cameras. And then that coinciding with a big push on YouTube and Instagram and social media, like you're saying, kind of created a really good storm because you had all these guys that were, you know, there was kind of a rule of thumb, like if you wanted to shoot a big deer in Michigan, you just go somewhere other than Michigan. So you go, you know, go out to the Midwest and do that. So a lot of guys flock out of the state. And then you had the mindset of people, well, I can't really do that. You know, I might have a family 40 that's in the family for years, or we always hunt our piece. And then, you know, on social media, you got guys, you know, it's like so much education has happened in the past decade from, you know, aging deer to understanding habitat, you know, better food plots. So it's like kind of been a perfect storm. And yeah, we're lacking behind some of the other states, but I feel like the next 10 years should be really good. I mean, I just did a podcast with a guy that's launching this upcoming week. He's 18 years old. He shot 186 inch buck when he was 13 and it had a broken like 12 inch tine broken off. Wow. And that was strictly because he's in a neighborhood full of people that one guy was like, my goal was at the time was like, I want to grow a 200 inch deer in Michigan. Like he would have been laughed at a decade ago, you know, impossible. People were just impossible. Can't do it. We don't have blah, blah. It's like, no, he's never had the age. So I think you got a lot of guys that are in that same mindset. Like I've hunted here for years. Like this is the family farm. I see all these other places doing it. Well, Missouri looks a lot like Michigan. Parts of Iowa look a lot like Michigan from a terrain standpoint. They're doing this, this, and this. Let's implement that here and then have trigger control. And the next thing you know, holy cow, there's a 3-year-old deer. Like, what? I remember the first time I got a picture of the same deer the next year, I was like ecstatic. I was ecstatic. I was like, Dad, look, he's got this, like, he had a weird brow tie and it was probably a 3-year-old deer. I was like, this is that same deer. And we're like going back and forth. We're like, no way, it actually is the same deer. How is that possible? So that's, it's a lot has happened in, you know, a short amount of time. But yeah, I think every time people say, is the internet bad for hunting? And I'm like, man, without the internet, there'd probably be, Michigan would be the same as it's always been. You know, it took a movement to start it.
Yeah. I got another question for you. I think I may have asked you this while you're down here, but I'd love to, it's becoming one of my favorite topics to talk to people about from out of state. You mentioned Michigan is a 2-buck state. Oklahoma is also a 2-buck state. And there are I'd say there's a growing portion of the state that would love to see Oklahoma become a 1-buck state. You know, they look at states like, it's funny too, because the state they always throw out there to compare it to is Iowa, and Iowa is not a 1-buck state. I love pointing that out.
Nope.
Now Kansas to the north, yep. You know, Kansas touches Oklahoma. It is a 1-buck state. And yes, Oklahoma or Kansas has really big deer. But I don't know. I always have to kind of point out that I know I'm in a special place where I have family land. I don't have to rely on public. We're in an area where there's pretty big places all the way around us, so I get to manage more than the average person. But for me, I love using that second tag as a management tag, you know, shooting. Like I have a lot of super old bully 8-points on my wall. You know, I've killed multiple deer 6, 7, 8 years old. And that's usually what that second tag is for. And then my one other tag is for like kind of my trophy buck. And so I don't know, like, you know, like you said, y'all are a little bit behind Oklahoma as far as getting there up to the age structure and the trophy potential. Would you be in favor of Michigan going to 1-buck, or do you think the 2-bucks is the way to go?
So it's kind of twofold, maybe not twofold, but so Ohio is really close to Michigan and Indiana. They're directly south of us and they are 1-buck states. And a lot of guys like to do what you said. They like to point, hey, Ohio's got bigger deer, so is Indiana, and they're only 1-buck. And it's like, well, I'm sorry, that doesn't really compute to me because they're completely different states, they're completely different deer densities, completely different hunters, numbers, you know, all that stuff. And I think shame on you if you only had 1-buck tag in your pocket and you shot a deer because it was an inferior deer, and you would not have shot that if you only had 1-buck tag. That's a you problem. That's not a government. That's not a tag issue. That's you not being, you know, whatever, be, you know, integrity or not integrity, but like solid enough in your hunting, like goal or your journey, that if a 2.5-year-old deer or 3.5-year-old deer or 1.5-year-old deer walks out and you shoot it because you got 2-buck tags in your pocket. But if you're like, oh, if I only had 1-buck tag, I wouldn't shoot that. Well, you're not doing a service to the deer population at all. If that's really what you want to, you know, hang your hat on, like, are you doing the right thing? Are you trying to help herd density, all that stuff? And I think at today's time, I mean, we all understand that having a healthy buck to doe ratio and a healthy age structure in the whitetail herd is a good thing. Like, that is good. It's going to have years, generations of hunting opportunities for lots of people. So that's kind of how I clap back at people, like, hey, if you need a government agency to tell you that you can only shoot 1-buck to keep you from doing something that you probably shouldn't do, that's a you problem. That's not anything else. So that's my mindset. I love having 2-buck tags. And it's not necessarily because I'm at the point where we have multiple, you know, overly mature deer or, you know, management deer. You're trying to get rid of those, you know, 130-inch 8-pointers that run all your nice young deer off. I'm not quite there yet at some of my properties, but it's just from the fact that if I got to play early October and I can get one down and then I can hunt the rest of the year, I just like hunting. Like, I like being able to hunt up, you know, hunt in the woods and learn a lot. So, I mean, I filled both my buck tags last year with a bow, and then I filled both my buck tags in 2020, and then I filled both my buck tags when I was, I think, 14 or 15. So I've only done it 3 times since I was 12 years old. So it doesn't happen often, but yeah, that's kind of my thing. I'm just like, come on.
Yeah. So I know we haven't known each other very long, but I love the late season. Like, I have killed probably 75% of my good bucks I've killed like Thanksgiving and later. I've actually killed very few bucks in November. I take that back. Our rifle season is like the last week in November. So if you count that, then yeah, it ups the average. But I've killed a lot of bucks in December, and I've killed a lot of bucks in January. Well, this last year.
Okay.
Yeah. And I've killed very few mature bucks in October. Actually, this year was my second ever mature buck in October. But yeah, so this year I killed one buck October 5th, a 5-year old. And then the infamous 2% buck I killed in November during rifle season. I think it was like the day, I think it's the day or two after Thanksgiving. It's like the very end of November. And I was tagged out on bucks going into December, and I've never had that happen in my entire life. And I felt so like just so weird and odd, like because usually that's like the time of year I'm waiting for, gearing up for. Not that I don't hunt before that. I've just never really had that much success. And so like I started thinking about like, man, if we were a one buck state, there's no way I was going to pass up that deer October 5th. And just being like done for the year, like that would have been so, so weird.
Mm. Absolutely. Like, yeah, this year I didn't have a buck tag for gun season. I was like, this is odd. Thank goodness my son was trying to shoot a deer so I could like hunt vicariously through him, mm-hmm. you know, kept me very engaged, you know, doing that. But I, you know, as you're talking, I want to say it was Midwest Whitetail. They talk about, oh, I want to say it was Mike Reed's farm. He's got that river bottom farm or whatever. And he kind of broke in. Maybe it was like a podcast they did or a little video snippet they did. Well, he talked about the importance of shooting enough mature bucks. And I was like, that's a weird topic, but I'm interested. You have me. And he was like, you know, I bring, you know, my kids out here and family, friends and all that. And you have to like it. You have to be able to, you know, balance the herd correctly. And if you have all these, you know, really big properties and you got guys who are like, we're only shooting, you know, 5-year-old bucks that are 160 and up or whatever that numerical number may be for them. Mm-hmm. And all you're doing is just letting all these 8 points go and they're reaching maturity and they're, you know, doing that. That's really not a good herd dynamic health thing that they want to go for. So you almost have to be like unselfish to a point. Where you having people come to your, you know, your spots and hunt. And it kind of opened my eyes a little bit to that. And I was like, and I've hunted Iowa before a couple times, and I've seen some of those things in my own eyes. And so there's so much more that goes into consistently shooting high scoring, high age class deer than something as simple and as basic as you now only have one buck tag. Mm-hmm. So I hate people trying to just have like a quick, easy fix to, you know, do that. And I think there's just so much more that goes into it. And to top it off, if the season's October 1st to January 1st, I would love to be able to hunt every day. Like that's, mm-hmm. that would be my like goal. Like I want to have a tag in my pocket and able to, you know, take advantage of that. So yeah, I'm in the camp of keep my two buck tags. Let's just get better trigger control.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny you bring that up. Cause I've just kind of talked about, you know, all the mature bucks. I've just kind of got to that point. Probably last year, or well, I guess it'd be the year before last now, where I kind of realized like, hey, I have, you know, an extra mature buck or two. Cause normally I've never really hunted a specific buck. I've always had, you know, usually every year I have like 3 to 4 that are kind of on my list, mature and everything. This last year, it was the first year that I really, like I designated a tag to the 2% buck for the, like, I was like, even, you know, I ended up killing one October 5th, but I was like, other than that, like I'll kill one of these other deer, but one of these tags is going to be for that specific buck. But normally I'm basically putting them in a, you know, age order. And yes, a lot of times there's maybe like a 5-year-old that's bigger than some of the 6-7-year-olds. And that one may be a little higher on the list, but if one of those other bucks walks out, I'm still going to shoot it. So that's kind of how I normally do kind of my quote unquote hit list. It's really whichever one of these bucks gives me an opportunity. But yeah, in the last year or two, well, now I have a nephew and a niece who hunt, and I think this year I may have another nephew hunting. So that's been a little bit more interesting. And then I have a good buddy of mine that I trust. You know, I trust him not to shoot something he's not supposed to. I've started letting him hunt the last year or two. But where I was going with all this that I kind of got lost in is after I killed the 2% buck, like I said, I killed him like the last week in November. Right around mid-November and then early December, I had two really nice mature 8 points that I had like one or two pictures of, But they basically, after I'd killed the buck in October and that buck in November, they basically moved in and set up their home range over our property where they had never had before. Like I said, in the past, I'd get like a few random pictures of them, but basically I had a gap to fill. You know, I'd taken two mature bucks out and these two other bucks showed up, and I actually, one of them I could have killed, but he showed up, like I said, about a week before I killed the 2% buck, and I had a couple opportunities and I purposely did not hunt. I had my niece on him once and they spooked him getting the gun out the window. And then I tried to get my buddy on him and he ended up not being able to come up a weekend. He showed up. So, yeah, all that to say, I think there's something to also shooting those mature bucks, so that other mature bucks can move in.
Mm, I agree. Yeah. And I think, you know, and I had the fortunate, opportunity, like you invite us down to hog hunt. So I kind of got immersed in the Oklahoma way of, or Oklahomian, whatever you guys refer to yourself as, you know, hunting. And it's a really cool dynamic what you guys have in, you know, that part of Oklahoma with terrain, with, you know, landscape and all that stuff. And it is a good whitetail habitat. You know, I would not have, it was not what I anticipated when I went down there, but seeing the layout, understanding, you know, the few conversations me and you have with your mindset of how to hunt those deer and being in a, you know, different climate, like you know, weather's different, you know, time of year, like you're explaining how good it is to hunt, you know, late November and December. And like by that time, you know, here in Michigan, December is like, could be a really tough time to hunt because they're, you know, they've got so much pressure. And if it's really weather, you know, weather driven, if it's a mild December, it's gonna be tough to see some deer. But if it's a cold, brutal winter coming, deer hungry, you know, they're hitting the fields, doing your plots, you can have a great time. But yeah, it's cool what you got going on there. And you know, we got to talk a little bit about how you're getting your nieces and nephews, you know, involved and seeing how happy that made you. And that's why we do this, man. We do this because we were all those kids at one time that had that twinkle in our eye, you know. So being able to share that with them and have that family dynamic it's really cool. It's cool to see.
Mm-hmm. I got one other Michigan deer question before we move on. And man, we're flying through this thing, but you can't talk about Mission without talking about the UP a little bit. So you mentioned you weren't really north and you weren't really south. Can you just kind of explain that dynamic to people who don't know Michigan as well?
Yeah, I mean, so the UP is somehow it's not Wisconsin, it's Michigan. Not really sure how that happened, but it is the northern, that is the northernmost part of the state. We have all the Great Lakes. So, you know, if you look on the map, you can see it pretty easy that the UP is kind of separated from the main part of Michigan by bodies of water. It's surrounded. And there's the Mackinac Bridge is what, you know, you can get across into the UP from me. So I'm a troll, as all the UP like to reference us as trolls because we're below the bridge. But that is an area of the state that, like I said, that used to be the deer mecca for Michigan, you know, back in the day. So many camps, so many people would go there and travel, you know, leave from Detroit and come from other states, come from Wisconsin to hunt the UP. And I've been through it a few times. I don't spend a ton of time in the UP. But like I said, I've been there and it's a cool little diverse pocket of the state. And it's unfortunately, you know, the last few years, maybe a few decades, it's the hunting has kind of teetered off up there. And there's a couple things that go into that. It used to be a big, you know, paper mill was a big thing back in the day. So trees were constantly getting harvested and you had the regenerative growth going, paired with, you know, wolves. And now we have less trees getting cut up there and more wolves. So the deer migrate up there actually, because there's so much snow, they actually migrate kind of similar to how people, you know, how mule deer will migrate with winter. Whitetails do that same thing up there in the UP, which is kind of cool. And it happens in like, you know, the northern states of like Minnesota and Wisconsin too. It's not just a UP thing, but there's a lot less deer there now, unfortunately. And majority of it, there's still pockets. Mm-hmm. Actually was talking to a guy this week that he's got a camp up there in Escanaba area. And they seem to do really well still. But yeah, it's a cool thing. And it's steeped in tradition. I mean, the movie Escanaba in the Moonlight is probably one of the greatest all time deer camp videos you can watch. And yeah, it's a pretty cool thing. So there's pictures of just these old cars with, you know, these huge, I mean, huge deer, you know, roped on, you know, big buck poles and all that stuff, which it's a really cool part of the state.
Mm-hmm. I know I've told my Escanaba and the Moonlight story on here a dozen times, but I'm going to really quickly tell it one more. I probably told you. I was probably 15 years old, didn't quite have my driver's license, and my parents were going out of town for a weekend, and I can't remember if my brothers were going with them or if my brothers already had plans, but for some reason I was going to be home alone. My sisters are going to spend the night at their friend's house. And so before my parents left town, my mom took me into town to buy a frozen pizza, and we went to Blockbuster so I could get some movies, you know, to keep me occupied. And I'm walking up and down the aisle at Blockbuster, and I just see the guy from Dumb and Dumber next to a white-tailed deer. And I was like, that's the movie for me. And I watched that movie by myself at home alone at 15 years old in the dark, and it scared me to death. And then at the end of the movie, I'm just like, what did I watch? And I was like, I was literally like confused. Yeah. And so the next day I had one of my buddies over and we watched it together, and I laughed my head off seeing it the second time. But yeah, so anyway, that's my escalation.
It gets a little weird. It does. It gets a little weird when they start playing cards. That's for sure. It gets a little odd, but it's a classic. Yeah. It's hilarious. Yeah. But that, you know, the way they talk about deer hunting, you know, that kind of that illusion that you get in that movie when, you know, shops are closed down November 15th. I mean, it used to be nothing was open. No one had to go to school. I mean, it was like, it was a holiday. Like, it was the coolest day in the world. And that was Michigan for, you know, it's not as big of a deal anymore. I think most schools, when dads call and say, yeah, old Johnny's not going to be at school tomorrow, they all know why, because it's November 15th. But, you know, that movie's good stuff. And the setup, you know, they kind of had that deer camp vibe. There was a lot of those in Michigan. There still is quite a few, but that used to be the thing. You know, you and your cronies go have weird, drink some beer, and weird things happen at deer camp, you know, kind of a thing. So that was the culture of Michigan there for a long time.
Uh-huh. Yeah, man, that's awesome. That's awesome.
But I do have a couple questions for you.
Yeah.
You know, we kind of jumping back to the beginning of the podcast. What kind of food plots are you planting down there?
So not the ones that I wanted, actually. So my plan... last year I planted soybeans for the first time. Last year was really my first year to have like a successful spring food plot.
Okay.
And last year I did all soybeans and they did fantastic. They grew great. The deer loved them. And so that was my plan. And, you know, with the ranch, we have all the equipment I could need and want. If anything, it's kind of a curse. Like our equipment is almost too big for me to do like you know, small food plots. Like it's actually a challenge. Just for instance, like our drill, I think, is 16 feet wide.
Ooh.
Well, so like if you're trying to plant 1 acre at, you know, 30 pounds per acre, like you're barely filling up each little seed cup. And so trying to get the seed distributed at well. So I know it sounds like a terrible problem, but it is a challenge.
Well, because where you are doing these food plots, if it was better land, guess what? You wouldn't be putting a food plot
exactly.
there. So that's the kind of the thing you have to traverse through.
Yep. So this year I had a weekend picked out. The weather was going to be decent. Like, you know, still been pretty wet, but it was kind of my only opportunity. Went to a seed store, like big time, like that's all they do is seed, and they were completely out of soybeans. So I guess all the farmers had just gotten to them. But they had like a deer mix that had two different kinds of cowpeas, iron clay, and I can never remember the other one. It had some soybeans in it. Millet and okra, which y'all probably can't grow okra up there. It's got to be really hot to grow okra. And then in one of my plots that was kind of up on the hill, I'm not sure if I think we took you back there at some point, but I had just kind of this quarter acre food plot and this saddle, just really good natural deer movement. And I planted it last year in the soybeans, and like they never stood a chance. Like the deer density was just too high. I actually think I thought that they weren't growing at all. And then I finally figured out that they actually were coming up. The deer just weren't giving them a chance. And so I took the plow back there and I made that into a full acre, and I actually planted that in alfalfa. So first time trying alfalfa.
Oh, nice.
It's very finicky. It's not something you just kind of go do in a weekend, which is exactly how I tried to do it. So we'll see if it works out or not. But yeah, so I did.
Yeah. Cause that's more of a long, is that more of a long-term play then for you there?
It is, yeah. So it's a perennial, so it'll come back year after year if you take care of it. And one you can buy like a specific chemical that's made to kill grass and everything. Mm-hmm. It's kind of expensive. but that's probably what I'm going to have to end up doing, because in a perfect world, you know, I'd be out there a week or two early spraying the grass, letting it all die, and then disking it and leveling it and all that. But that's just not the cards I was dealt with the weather. You know, it's just been so wet. It wasn't going to work. So I dissed it a ton. I mean, got a great seed bed. I just checked it over the weekend. I'm getting a pretty good stand. And then I think in a few weeks, I'm just going to have to bite the bullet and buy the chemical and spray it. So I ended up,
yeah, because you want that to be able to establish itself, right? Yes. Like the alfalfa. I mean, that's what a lot of guys raise here for, mm-hmm. you know, dairy cows and yeah. that kind of thing. But like, it takes a little bit when they first plant it, takes them a little bit, but they do spray it quite a bit, you know, mm-hmm. cut it only once or twice maybe to, you mm-hmm. know, if you get one cutting off it, they're super pumped, you're one.
Yeah.
But for you, for a whitetail plot, once that thing establishes itself and you kind of maintain it, you know, spray mm-hmm. it maybe a couple of times, that should be a pretty well producing plot mm-hmm. for quite a few years.
That's the hope. And yeah, like, you know, a lot of people say you really need to mow it, like you were talking about, but I'm thinking with the deer density I had back there, that they'll mm-hmm. basically do that for me, and I won't, you know, I can mow it if I need to, but I'm thinking that the deer will be able to kind of keep it down.
So. Oh yeah. Yeah. Being only an acre. Yeah. You'll be good. Yeah. Cause I actually target alfalfa fields early season can be really good mm-hmm. for here in Michigan, depending on when they cut their last cut for the year. I mean, if I could hunt in September, I would be, you know, really targeting the alfalfa fields here in Michigan. So that's pretty cool doing that. And I wanted to ask you too about some of you kind of bulldozed or kind of knocked over some mm-hmm. stuff when we were there. Did you do anything in that area?
No, I didn't. So I had my drone with me. I just didn't have time to fly it, but yeah, I really don't do anything in that area other than just kind of dozing it, clearing it out, and then I just let Mother Nature do its thing. And so nice. I've done that. This was probably my third year in a row to get in there and do some of that. So just basically every year I go, I basically go to the same spots and I just kind of expand what I've done. You know, I usually get a day or two where I can basically just do nothing but sit on the dozer. And so I'm going to, you know, that area, it's really a canyon. So there's like three or four different draws yeah. that funnel down into one spot. And it's got about 100 foot of elevation change from top to bottom. And so I've just gone around, but it was, I think I mentioned that it was completely clear cut in 2008. And so there's no like mature timber on our place, which was good several years ago. But now, you know, that stuff's getting up to, you know, 15 years old. And so I'm going in there and trying to kind of thin it out. I'm dozing every cedar I can find, just about, you know, basically just trying to get some openings, to where it gives deer more of a place to bed. And I've done all that kind of in design with my food plots and my access and everything, to where that canyon area is also my sanctuary. So I never go, like, I went in there and did that dozing. I think that was end of February, and I still have not been in it. Don't plan on going into it till next February.
Hard is that to want to set a stand, right? You know, probably right where I'm thinking.
It's
have a stand right in that point.
Yeah.
Or that transition point.
Whew. It's so hard. But I kind of learned the hard way that it works out for me. Not so, like, when we bought that property in 2017, and I took a feeder and a camera right down there into the heart and got pictures of some pretty good bucks, but, you know, I'd go in there and hunt it, and I wouldn't see a thing, like bucks, does anything. And so the next year I moved the feeder to like right at the edge, like, you know, right on the edge of the canyon, set up a little stand there, same thing, got picture. I actually got pictures of even more bucks, and I got a picture of the biggest buck I've ever had on that property in 2018. That year I moved it up to the top of the canyon. But again, every time I'd go in there and hunt, I wouldn't see a thing, does anything. And I just, I really had to learn, because I'd never really hunted terrain. Like all the other places I'd ever hunted were pretty flat.
Yeah.
And so I just kind of learned, like, man, you got to play that wind. I had to worry about thermals, which is something I've never had to do. And so I basically finally eventually figured out that, like, all right, I'm going to put all that good stuff kind of close to the edge, not up against the edge. And I'm going to hunt on the other side of that. And let those deer just have that canyon. They just have it. They can feel as comfortable and as awesome. You know, like, I never go in there. Like I said, no human scent, nobody else goes in there. And then they get used to going from that up to my food plots, my feeders, whatever, up on the edge. And I, you know, I stay away from there pretty good also. And then just with the way I hunt the wind and everything, they just have no need to be like fearful. And so eventually they just get so comfortable. They start coming out in daylight. And the last couple of years, so the last, I think, 4 years, I've filled both my buck tags. So I'm on a 4-year run right now. And I think a lot of it is just because
you're not being
aggressive. But that's also, I think
that's so hard to do when you're from the outside looking in, but the way your property lays out and how you have the ability to, you know, make these strategic plays, it does really mesh really well with what you're trying to accomplish there. So, and you know, maybe for the people who are just listening to this and, you know, and us talking about it, the elevation there gives the deer such an advantage to see you accessing. Like that's like one of your battles. Like you cannot backdoor them. You have to, you're giving them all, you're giving them the terrain. They get the high, they get the high point, you know, on you. So I completely, I get what you're saying. And every time you show me where you hunt and set up, I'm like shaking my head. I'm like, but you know, my gut's like, man, what about right there? And you're like, I used to do that and it never worked for me. And I'm, what do you mean? He's like, I would do this. And sure enough, that they were just watching you do your thing and they were sliding out the back door and you never were in the game. So yeah, you definitely got, you got it figured out. That's pretty cool. And you know, hopefully this fall it shapes out the same way, but you never know, but
that's
it's cool what you got going on.
But that is, I will say, like you're talking, that's one of the reasons I enjoy traveling so much now, because it's so much different than what I do on my own place. Like, you know, getting to go hunt at my sister's place in Nebraska, where I am hunting crops, because I've never hunted crops before I went up there. I actually I had Tony Peterson on my podcast, and the reason I reached out to him was because I'd never hunted a crop field when I went up there. And and like this year, I'm going to go hunt Kansas with my muzzle loader. And I, you know, I've done some scouting. Like we have some pretty decent public around us, and I've, you know, hunted it a little bit over the years. Cause it's, I learned so much doing that. And kind of, you know, when you were talking earlier about the podcast and everything, like I love, part of the reason I loved listening to like Mark Kenyon's podcast, even though it was really nothing like what I do here, but like learning from people like Mark who have it so tough and have to do everything so right and try so hard, that has made me such a better deer hunter here on my own place, where honestly it is a little bit easier.
Yeah. And it's, and it's easier because you were a guy that wanted to be better hunter. You wanted to be, you know, the best you can be at it. And guess what? You listened, you learn, you try, and you're, and that you're reaping the reward of that. Like that's, I'm the same boat as you. Like we were all that age where it's like, man, we want to be good at this and look at all this information. What are you going to do with that information? You know, and you gotta, can't be stubborn. You gotta be open-minded and you gotta try new things. And it is fun. And yeah, I love going out of state, like going to Illinois or Missouri. I drew Kansas this year, like you.
Nice.
And I am just like, itching to go walk around a place I've never been before.
Yeah.
And you get to put all these things into practice and use what I did in Illinois last year, and hopefully it kind of translates to Kansas a little bit, or maybe I'll get to Kansas and be like, man, I hunt stuff like this in Michigan, I can, you know, swing in here and do this and just have a good time, man. And not necessarily, yes, I'm holding out for a big mature buck, but if I don't shoot one, it's totally fine. You know, the pressure is way different out of state than it is here in Michigan.
Yeah. You doing a Kansas archery?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yep. Very so we nice. Drew, me and buddies, my dad, we drew, I'm forgetting now. I think 11 and something, 11 and 14 or something like that, or 11 and 19.
Gotcha.
I'm about to look here a second. So we're kind of like on the southeast corner of Kansas there.
Gotcha. So. Yeah, I'll be complete opposite. I was going northwest. I was going northwest trying to get that mule deer tag, and ended up not getting it. So I think part of my struggle is going to be actually just finding a whitetail instead of, you know, finding a deer that's not a mule deer. But
Because I'm 11 and 19, and then we get the one unit 12 that touches 11. So
gotcha.
I'm excited, man. It looks like it's river bottom kind of ish, you know, with rolling terrain, and I'm just already just drooling, you know, looking on the e-scout and like, ooh, this could be good. But I could get there and it could be all cattle pasture. So you know how that goes.
Yep. Nice. Cool. Awesome.
I do have one more question if you don't got nothing for me right away before we end it.
No, go ahead.
What's your long, like this longbow journey you got going on? Are you Are you still shooting the bow right now, or where are you at with that?
I am. I'm shooting it decently. It's sitting here. It's about an arm reach away. And I just recently got some heavier arrows because I shot a hog with it last year, and it was a pretty long shot. It was almost 30 yards, but just hit this hog perfectly, quartering away and everything. And I only got about, I say only, it's not bad. I got about 8 inches of penetration, which should have been plenty. But the hog got away. It made it to the brush. If I really wanted to, I probably could have found it, but I wasn't going to chase a wounded hog into the brush at night. I think I'd even forgotten a flashlight, and I didn't have a gun. All I had was the longbow. So that's just not a recipe for success. But
Nope.
yes, so my goal this year is to shoot some kind of deer with it. I don't care if it's a doe or buck, whatever. So I have a couple spots set up, to where I can hunt regular bow or longbow. And so that's the goal. I haven't been shooting it as much as I should have, but I have been shooting it still. And I mean, it's pretty much ready to go. I was pretty determined to buy a new heavier longbow this year, but I just don't know if that's quite in the budget. And I'll say this too, like one thing that I've found practicing with the longbow is it has made me such a better compound shooter. Just the focus and practicing the form and all that. Last year I was really practicing with the longbow leading up to season, and then all of a sudden season was about to start, and I was like, oh crap, I should probably shoot my compound. And man, it was like riding a bike. Like, even though it's very different, but just all, like I said, all the focus and the thought and the form and stuff, kind of it relays pretty well. So yeah, I'm still got the goal for sure.
I love it because like my traditional journey has been, oh, it's been spread out pretty far. I grew up shooting trad bow, no sights on a compound. My dad was that way. He's a big proponent for long or recurve hunting and traditional stuff. So I kind of grew up shooting instinctively, one pin for all yardages kind of stuff. Fingers, I didn't even use release until I was, in my well into my teenage years. So I've carried a traditional, I had an old Damon Howitt recurve I carry in the woods quite a bit. I have a Predator takedown recurve right now, and I've kind of struggled. Like, it'd be one of those things where I would just like I'm committed to the recurve this year, and I would, have giant deer show up that were, 25 to 30 yards away. And I was like, man, if I just had my compound, I would have killed that thing. It'd be my biggest deer ever. So I went through the roller coaster of that. I hit a deer and tracked it too soon because I thought I shot it good, and it'd been a liver shot. Found it 2 weeks later and it was rotten. And so there's some kind of a sour taste in my mouth for trad hunting. And this year, my dad's like, he's been using a compound the last couple of years and really doesn't have the enjoyment of shooting it like he does his recurve because he ended up losing his in a fire. So this year he's like, I'm buying one. And I was like, so we have a property we both hunt. And I was like, are we gonna just is the, if we bow hunt that, we have to have a trad bow in our hands. And he looked at me and we shook on it. He's like, if either one of us hunt there this year, we're using a trad
Nice,
bow. So,
nice,
yep. So
man.
my journey is I haven't quite started shooting it quite yet. I've been shooting my compound a lot to get my shoulder strong. I got a messed up labrum in my shoulder. So I got to take it easy, got to make sure I don't overdo it. But I've been shooting the reps through my compound, feeling good. So, yeah, my recurve's sitting right with arm's reach here too. And I was actually thinking about when I just thought of that. I was like, it's still light out for a little bit. I might go zip a couple of arrows and see how I feel.
Yeah,
So
there you go.
it's a cool thing. And I know what talking about you that when we were down there big hunting, I was like, yeah, he likes it. And I was like, got me kind of like thinking about it too. So
Yeah.
that's
Yeah,
sweet.
it is unforgiving, I'll put it that way. Like if I talked about earlier, like riding a bike with the compound, that is not the case with the recurve, or
No.
any trad bow. Like you really have to stay after it. So that's awesome though. I'm glad you got your dad to kind of keep you accountable, and man,
Yep.
that's the way to do
My 150 is going to show up at about 33 yards, though. I just have a
it.
feeling I'm going to have to just smile and say touche. But I'm at the point now, I think, in my hunting journey, career, whatever you want to call it, that setting a goal and kind of sticking to my guns through a season is more important than just killing something. So I think even if I shoot a doe with it, it'll be rewarding enough for me. So just trying to do things like that every year to keep me engaged. And not, you talk about a lot of guys that end up getting burned out because of the big buck craze, or they just don't have the joy, you know, the enjoyment out of, you know, hunting anymore. And I'm just like shaking my head. I'm like, how is that possible? I could never imagine myself getting to that point, but I'm one of those guys that's constantly evolving. Like, I'm going to try to get better at this aspect. I keep myself very, like, you know, very engaged with it, and maybe I want to get a little better at hunting, you know, hilly country, or maybe I want to get a little better food plotter, you know, or whatever that may be. So it keeps me ready, keeps me hungry. And I'm pumped for the fall, dude. I'm so pumped. It's only June, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, when's it gonna be October, you know? But it's good.
It's getting to that time of year where it's like, all right, let's just do this thing.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Well, Nate, it's I think we're right at an hour now, so I better let you go. But man, I really appreciate it. We could have kept going. Like, we didn't even get to talk about the small game and everything. So maybe a few weeks we'll jump back on and talk some of that stuff. But really, really appreciate you coming on today.
Dude, I appreciate it. Anytime you need a guy from Michigan to come on and talk about hunting or anything like that, I mean, I'm down. And I'm still on cloud nine from that pig hunt. So that was top notch fun right there. And I do appreciate that. And it's a cool thing what you do for there. And I hope you have a wonderful summer. Hope you get the rain to spread out a little bit, stay busy, and the family does good.
Sounds good, man. I will talk to you later. Appreciate it. Big shout out to Nate for coming on and hanging with me today. Really, really good one. We could have kept going for another hour. We're definitely going to have him back on another time, maybe later this summer. So thank you guys for tuning in. As always, I love you guys. Don't forget to get out there, get those mineral sites out, get those cameras set up, get those food plots in, get those stands hung. It is almost time, guys. I know we're still a few months away, but it's going to be here before we know it. So get out there. Enjoy God's creation, and until next week, I will see you guys right back here on the Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.